Welcome to Catholic Answers Live, the program where you participate with your questions about apologetics and evangelization, including the most important theological, spiritual, moral, and social issues facing the world today. Call now with your question for today's guest, toll free, 1-888-31-TRUTH. That's 888-318-7884. Now, from San Diego, Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back for our second hour on Catholic morality, and specifically we're asking you the question, why do you reject Catholic morality, whether it has to do with sexual relationships or war or capital punishment or any other aspect of the Catholic Catholic moral teaching? Why do you reject it? We'd love to have that conversation with you. 888-318-7884 is the number. 888-318-7884. I am your host, Cy Kellett, and our guest this hour, apologist Trent Horn, who is the staff apologist here at Catholic Answers and the author of Answering Atheism, Persuasive Pro-Life, and of course this book, Hard Sayings, A Catholic Approach to Answering Bible Difficulties. And when I say this book, that means I'm holding it up for those of you joining us on Facebook Live, YouTube Live, or Periscope, and I have neglected to mention you today, so thank you for being with us via those media. And if you have a question, you can give us a call, or you can type it in right there on Facebook Live, YouTube Live, or Periscope. Trent, we now go to Anonymous in Columbus, Ohio, listening on 820 AM. Anonymous, you are on with Trent Horn. What do you object to in Catholic morality?
Greetings. If a Catholic couple marries and gets a civil divorce, and one of the partners marries the other partner, in the valid marriage is expected to be celibate until either their partner dies or comes back to them. Is that correct?
Well, Anonymous, what the church teaches is essentially what Jesus taught in the Gospels when Jesus was asked about divorce. And what Jesus said was this. He said in Mark chapter 10, he said that when a man and woman are joined together as husband and wife, in Mark 10, he says, the two shall become one, so they're no longer two but one. Mark 10:9, he says, what therefore God has joined together, let not man put asunder. And then Jesus reiterates and says, whoever divorces his wife and marries another commits adultery against her. So the church teaches what Jesus taught, that marriage is the lifelong union of a man and woman, and if one partner in a marriage initiates divorce and leaves, that marriage is still valid. They're still married, even if they're civilly divorced, because no one can dissolve that marriage. Let man not put asunder what God has joined. Only death can dissolve that. If it is a valid marriage between two people, and especially in Christian circumstances, two baptized Christians. So remarriage would constitute adultery in that case, provided that the previous marriage was valid. So that would be the church's teaching. Was that just you? Just had a question about this, or did you have a personal?
My question wasn't on the divorce partner. My question was on the partner that remains.
Yeah,
the other partner is not expected to enter into a conjugal relationship with anyone else, unless his or her spouse dies. Is that correct?
If they have a valid marriage.
Yes, then, if they have a valid marriage.
Yes.
So they remain celibate for the rest of their life.
Mm-hmm.
Is that correct?
For their life or the life of the other spouse. They would be, by celibate, celibate's not the same thing as engaging in sexual relations. That's being incontinent. But it is, they would not be permitted to marry because they are still married to that other person, even though they've undergone a civil divorce. And I want to continue the conversation with you, Anonymous. I know this is a hard teaching for people to accept. I fully appreciate that. And I'm encouraged to have a conversation more about that. Do you feel now that you have clarification, this is a teaching you don't accept? Is that where you're coming from?
Well, if the person has sex, if the other person, you know, who didn't marry again, has sex, are they committing adultery?
Yes, they would be. Well, yes, they would, and also they would be having, yeah, they would be having sex outside of marriage, whether it's with a new spouse or just with somebody else. Yes, that's what Jesus taught. Yes.
Okay. Well, you know, I just think that that's, I've experienced a friend of mine who went through that, and he was basically psychologically devastated.
Yeah.
The divorce happened at 31 years old, when he was 31, and he never really, I would think a lot of people who knew him, never recovered from that, because he was a devout Catholic, his family was devout, and he never could deal with the fact that he would be seriously, you know, he would enter his sin, and he could not be with anyone else, and that was for the rest of his life. You're talking about a 31-year-old.
Because his wife divorced him.
And she remarried, and she was not coming back. So he was expected as a young man not to ever be with anyone else for the rest of his life a Catholic.
But it's interesting, though, when he entered into the marriage with her, he promised and understood he would never be with anyone else but her, right?
Correct.
Okay. So, I mean, he already was of the mindset, I'll never be with anyone else but my wife. But now a circumstance has arisen where he cannot be with his wife because his wife has left him. And what I would say, Anonymous, is that there's not an easy answer I can give to situations like these, except that in this life, through things like sin, and even just being mortal and being in this life, God gives each of us different crosses to bear. And some of us, he's given very heavy crosses. Take, for example, in marriage, there are cases where two people marry, and shortly after their marriage, one of them becomes sick or in an accident, suddenly becomes incapable of engaging in sexual relations anymore. This happens to people. And so, you know, and this is something I've known other people who their wives, you know, have complications from childbirth, and they can have sexual relations. They have to be very, very, very careful about it, and they engage in long periods of abstinence. So we get different crosses that are placed on us in this life. And the question is going to be, what are we going to choose? Are we going to choose saying, God, you know, through this other person's sin, my spouse has left me, they've hurt me and I am hurting. Are we going to choose, I want to go my way and choose this sin, I have a right to because I was sinned against? Or will we say, God, I've seen the ugliness of sin, I'm not going to answer sin with sin, I'm going to answer it with grace, and I'm asking for you to help me here. So do you see that I can't give an easy answer, but I can give a short answer, which is if when we are sinned against, God calls us to respond with grace, not more sin. And he can give us the grace to do that. So do you at least see where I'm coming from, Anonymous?
I believe I can get an understanding with more study of what you mean.
Okay. Well, that's a start. So definitely thank you for calling on that, and keep that in mind, that for, I think it's hard for people in our day and age. We don't think, it's so tragic. We don't think of marriage as being this lifelong bond that only death can dissolve it. We just don't think of that. It's just so hard. We live in a society where marriage is just basically a certificate and a fancy party and a white dress you say yes to. And so that if things just aren't working out, we go somewhere else. But that was never God's plan for marriage. That what's beautiful about God's plan for marriage is that it's sexually exclusive, lifelong, and two really become one till death do them part, for their good and the good of any children that may proceed from their union. So I'd also recommend a good book on marriage. Might be The Good News About Sex and Marriage by Christopher West, if you want to look at further study. But I am grateful that you called, and keep listening, and maybe we'll have you back on another show as you read more if you have more questions.
When we come back from this break, we'll take more calls on why you reject Catholic morality. That's what we're looking for. If there's any aspect of Catholic morality, from abortion, sex outside of marriage, birth control, capital punishment, any aspect of chastity that you want to say, well, no, I don't accept that part of Catholic morality, we're happy to take that call and discuss it with you. Trent Horn is our guest. 888-318-7884 is our number. That's 888-31-TRUTH. This is Catholic Answers Live, and we'll be right back.
Catholic Answers. Our success depends on you.
We hear it every year, the perennial question, what are you giving up for Lent? And there's nothing wrong with doing without certain things you may have an affinity for. But this year, why not turn the question around and ask, what are you taking on for Lent? If you don't have a daily time for reading the Bible, we recommend you make one. And to help you with those difficult passages, we also recommend a daily dose of Trent Horn's latest book, Hard Sayings, A Catholic Approach to Bible Difficulties. Hard Sayings is the perfect book for your Lenten journey. Trent looks at dozens of the most confounding passages in Scripture and offers clear, reasonable, and Catholic keys to unlocking their true meaning, deepening your understanding of God's Holy Word. Make this Lent one to remember. Order your copy of Hard Sayings today by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Do you want to end abortion, halt the attack on traditional marriage, and ensure religious freedom for ourselves and for our grandchildren? To do this, we must convert the culture. St. Paul Street Evangelization is a grassroots initiative that recognizes this need and takes it to the streets. If you're interested in peacefully sharing the gospel in your area, visit streetevangelization.com to learn more.
Homeschool Connections, an online provider of courses for your Catholic homeschool, is a sponsor of Catholic Answers Live. Homeschool Connections' website is homeschoolconnections.com.
Catholic Answers Live is brought to you in part by CatholicSingles.com, the website for Catholics who want to meet others who share their faith and values for faith, fellowship, and love. You can learn more at CatholicSingles.com. Catholic Answers Live thanks CatholicSingles.com for their generous support.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Trent Horn, our guest this hour, and the topic, why do you reject Catholic morality? And I've just tried to give you some hints about what Catholic morality teaches and see if you disagree with any of them or you reject them and you have a reason why. We would love to hear that, you know, whether it's abortion, sex outside of marriage, birth control, the Catholic teaching on war or capital punishment, on caring for the poor. I think we've covered immigration, so I may not go back to that one. We'll see. That's a 50-50 right now. But if you have some disagreement with Catholic morality, we're very happy to take that call and discuss it with you. 888-318-7884. 888-318-7884. Trent, we go now to another anonymous in Kearney, Nebraska, listening on Spirit Catholic Radio. Anonymous, you are on with Trent Horn. What's your question?
Yeah, my question kind of piggybacks well off the last one, and it has to do with sex outside of marriage. I was raised Catholic, so it's not so much rejecting the Catholic belief. I went away from the church for like 25 years, and I'm trying to find my way back in. But in those 25 years, I met a man, and we've been going together, sleeping together for the last 20 years. Well, now that I'm getting back to the faith, I want to be able to get that squared. And he was married before. Neither of them were baptized in any church, so I'm not sure if that has a bearing. But I'm looking for a way to explain to him why it's not okay to not be married. I talked to a priest about it, and he gave me all of the logic about starting a family, but we're both too old to have a family, so that argument doesn't really work to help convince him that we need to start doing it right. And I was just wondering what would be a good reason that might help him see that I want to kind of clean this up and get back to the church in all ways.
Sure. Now, Anonymous, let me sort through the situation a little bit. You are a baptized Catholic who has been away from the church for a while. You are in a romantic relationship with this man. Have you ever been married before, or you're just in this relationship with this gentleman?
No, I have never been married. He was.
He was. Is he Catholic?
No, neither him nor his ex-wife were baptized in any religion.
Hmm. Okay. Well,
so I don't know if he's even free to marry. You know.
Right. What would come about here then is even if he was never baptized, his wives were never baptized, the church still presumes that they were in a valid marriage. However, two non-baptized people, if you are in a marriage with someone who is, has never been baptized, between two non-baptized individuals, that can be dissolved aside from death. So that's not indissoluble. It's only a sacramental marriage between two baptized Christians that's valid would be indissoluble. So what would happen here is that still it's presumed to be valid, and the church understands that marriage, even if it's between people who are not baptized, that for it to be valid, there's the presumption that it's supposed to be lifelong. There's that pledge of unity and fidelity. So what you would have to do is, if you two, would you want to marry this man, or are you two, is marriage somewhere in the cards? I know you're older in years, but is that something either of you is open to?
I would like to. He has some reservations on it because he sees it as a piece of paper that's a false sense of security. And mm-hmm. I can understand that just because of his experience in his first.
Yeah.
But so, the other part of me goes, but don't I deserve something that's real?
And you do. And you most certainly do. That if this man, regardless of how old he is, how old you are, if he expects you, wants you to give yourself to him in an intimate way, to give your whole self to him, then he doesn't have a right to that piecemeal. You know, on his terms, that for what God planned for us, if we're to give ourselves fully and freely to one another, that's why God created the bond of marriage. It's something for all people. All people recognize, whether they're Christian or not. So what I'd recommend in this situation that one, I guess, for the both of you to go to see a priest first, that I would like to encourage you to come back to the faith, to the mercy of God through the sacrament of confession, and let God lift any of the burdens that have been placed on you in your heart over these decades, really, and to be free from them. And from there, to accept God's call to live a chaste and holy life. And God will give you the grace to do that. He's given you the grace all these decades, and you feel that pull to want to come back to the church, to, you know, that pull of God's love. So I would recommend to do that, to go to confession, to seek out a priest, and to make a pledge to live this chaste life. And if this man really loves you, then he'll make that promise to you, however both long you have to live, the promise to be only true to one another. Now, if he's been married before, at that point, if you two could move towards marriage, there'd be an investigation to see if his other marriages are valid, or if there's a possibility that they could be dissolved for him to marry you because you are baptized even though he is not, and that is a possibility. So I would talk to a priest and then talk to the tribunal in your diocese when it comes to marriage. So, but the steps would be reconciliation for yourself, going to, you know, with God and with the church, the resolution to live a holy life, to follow God's commandments, and then to find a healthy course for this relationship you are in with this man, and to sort out his past marriages and to investigate the possibility of to continue your relationship towards marriage, if that's where it's called. So I guess that's kind of the roadmap I'd look towards. Is that at least helpful, Anonymous?
Well, it is kind of, but I'm kind of trying to figure out a way that I can explain to him why it's so important to me, you know, because I've been for the last year going, I really want to go to confession, but then we get together and it's like I don't have what it takes to turn him down. And
I see.
It's one of those things, if I don't want to go to confession,
yeah,
and then the next week be in the same boat going, okay, I was just kidding, God, you know?
I think Anonymous,
I don't know how to address that issue and get him to understand, because when I have brought up abstinence with him and I bring it up in terms of I really want to get back to the church and see where this goes, then he all of a sudden goes absolute extremism to where you're breaking up with me and you never want to see me again. And it's like, no, that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying I need to put God first here.
That's right. That's the exact correct attitude. In the Gospels, Anonymous, Jesus was speaking to the disciples, to the apostles, and he said in Matthew 19:29, he said, "Everyone who has left houses or brothers, sisters, father, mother, children, or lands for my name's sake will receive 100-fold and inherit eternal life." Jesus understands that if we choose to follow him, that may, you know, sometimes people we are friends with or romantically involved with will understand and support us, but many people in this life won't. And we do have to make a choice sometimes. I'll choose God, or I'll choose this person that doesn't, that wants to lead me away from God, not towards God. And what God wants us to do is to always choose him and not choose those who would lead us away from God. And sometimes we, you know, we get tempted. We think, well, I'm not going to be happy. I'm going to be lonely. I love this person. I want to be with them. But ultimately, that person will never give us the joy in our hearts, that surpassing joy that God gives us. So I would tell him, you'll have to just tell him, look, God is the number one thing in my life. He created me. He loves me. He has a plan for me and for my eternal soul and for you. And I love you, and I want to share that with you. But if you don't see that the way I do, then maybe this relationship is not to be for us. And ultimately, I would say, you could say to him, if you love me, if you want what's best for me, you see, I believe this is what's best for me. And if you love me, will you help me to see that? And if you don't think it's what's best for me, that's such a fundamental difference. Maybe we have to take some time apart to figure this out. So I think that ultimately, to know, Anonymous, you deserve love. You are God's beloved. And if this gentleman wants to treat you as his beloved, he would not put anything between you and God, and to always choose God over anything that would lead us away from him. So are those helpful words to... I know it's a tough path, but is that helpful?
Yeah, that's really good. Thank you.
Okay. Well, God bless Anonymous, and let's pray for you that it's a struggle. Every struggle every day in life, I think, is a choice between, do we choose God or do we choose something that seems good in this world? We know it leads us away. It's like a mirage. It looks good. We know it leads us away from God, but it looks so good. But ultimately, it's going to leave us unsatisfied. That's the dilemma we face every day, both in big decisions and small ones. So we'll pray for you, Anonymous, and to continue your path, not to the mirage, but to the true joy we find in Jesus.
Thank you so much for that call, Anonymous. Our topic this hour, why do you reject Catholic morality? Our guest, Trent Horn, taking your calls at 888-318-7884. We go to Jonathan in Lake Forest, California, watching on YouTube. Jonathan, you are on with Trent Horn.
Yeah, hello.
Hi, Jonathan.
Yeah. So, first of all, I wanted to thank Trent for all he does. I'm a young returning Catholic, I guess you could say. The thing is with me, my best friends, all of them have been Protestant. My ex-girlfriend was also a Protestant belief. And I've actually just recently joined a Christian club, which is dominant in Protestant believers. And so my question was, how different is Protestant morality and theology compared to Catholic? What are the main reasons in a nutshell? And my main question is, how do I go about keeping my morality while not buckling to aggressive attacks to my faith or beliefs?
Sure. Great question. Number one, Protestant is an umbrella term. You have all kinds of Protestant groups underneath that term. Some that are closer to what Catholics believe, like Anglicans, some Lutherans. You could call them Protestants. They're not really, but Eastern Orthodox believers. They're non-Catholic Christians. So some are close, others would be further away. So they vary, but I would recommend, as we come here to our end, Jonathan, have good Catholic friends. Find Catholic friends that will build you up, that agree with you, so it's not always fights. Okay to have Protestant friends, Catholic friends that support you. Go to Mass, avail yourself of the sacraments, have a firm foundation in the truth so you can be a witness to others who might disagree.
We'll be right back with more on Catholic Answers Live.
There's only one. Catholic Answers Live.
It may be true for you, but not for me. How often have you heard this during a discussion with friends or family? Whether talking about faith, morality, politics, or just the basic notion of truth, so many people are captive to the notion of relativism, the belief that reality is something we decide. In his new audio presentation, Your Truth, My Truth, apologist Carlo Broussard breaks down this intellectual cancer, looking at the different kinds of relativism we regularly encounter and demonstrating how, ultimately, they collapse under the weight of their own incoherence. More importantly, Carlo makes a powerful case for the existence of objective truth, showing you how to explain to others that right and wrong are both real and universal, because it was designed that way by God. Order your copy of Your Truth, My Truth by calling 1-888-291-8000, logging on to the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Where can you find the answers to hundreds of the most common questions about the Catholic faith? Catholic Answers 20 Answer Series, that's where. Clear, concise, and easy to carry, the 20 Answer Series from Catholic Answers Press offers hard facts, powerful arguments, and clear explanations of the most important topics facing the Church and the world, all in a compact, easy-to-read package. They're available individually, at special bulk prices, or you can get a starter pack of all 20 at a very special price. And remember, you can now purchase them as ebooks for reading on your mobile devices. Call 1-888-291-8000 or visit the shop at Catholic.com today to get your copies of all the titles in this exciting new series, or ask for them at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Are you too critical of yourself, or maybe someone in your life is a persistent critic? Tomorrow on EWTN Radio, don't miss More to Life with Dr. Greg and Lisa Popcheck. They'll help you effectively respond to your worst critics, even if that critic is you. More to Life airs weekdays at 10 a.m. Eastern, 7 Pacific, on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. And coming up right after Catholic Answers Live, former U.S. Army Chaplain Dana Kroll discusses his conversion to Catholicism with host Marcus Grody. Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. So happy to have you with us here today on this Monday of Lent. Nothing special happens on Monday. You can eat meat on Mondays of Lent, Tuesdays of Lent, but it's still Lent. Hope your Lent is going well. Why do you reject Catholic morality is the question we are putting out to you, the listener, today. Why do you reject Catholic morality? Trent Horn is taking your questions and turning them into answers. Trent Horn, staff apologist here at Catholic Answers and the author of this book that's sitting right here with me on the desk, Hard Sayings, A Catholic Approach to Answering Bible Difficulties. Trent, we have Agnes in San Diego here, listening on 1000 AM Immaculate Heart Radio. Agnes, what did you want to say to Trent Horn?
Hi, Trent. I had a question in regards to homosexuality and family life. I completely understand and accept the Church's teaching as far as upholding the sacrament of marriage. So in regards to conversations and debates among my peers, I think we understand the Church's position on the sacrament of marriage. But then I've been posed the question of, well, in the case of adoption, what is the Church's position on adopting children if the couple or the individual is homosexual themselves? And I haven't had, I haven't been able to give a clear explanation as to, you know, what is our position in that, since I've always been posed the statement, love is love. And would you really leave an infant or a child in need? Would it be better for them to stay in a foster home than to be in, you know, a loving home, but maybe headed by those of the homosexual lifestyle? So I don't really know what to say. So could you help me?
Well, when this has come up in the United States, for example, it's usually come about with places like Catholic Charities and adoption services, where the choice is not between a child living in some kind of foster care or community adoption setting or being adopted by a same-sex couple. Typically, what happens is it's a choice between a opposite-sex couple or a man and woman, and there is also a same-sex couple, and the Catholic charity or the Catholic organization has a sets a preference or does not allow the same-sex couple to adopt. They prefer the opposite-sex couple, and or they may even say, we prefer male and female, and neither single parents nor same-sex couples, depending on the different situations involved. So, well, why would that be? Well, the church would operate from the principle that children have rights, that adoption is not about the parents, the adopters per se. It's always about what is in the best interest of the child. And through adoption, we always try to give back to the child what they've lost. Now, their biological parents can never be duplicated, but we can give the best replacement we can. And God in his wisdom has ordered the world so that when babies come into the world, they have a mother and father for a good reason, that it's complementary to one another, that the mother and father help a child grow to understand the role of men and women, how to relate to one another, how to be a healthy man, a healthy woman, how to relate to people of the opposite sex and the same sex. And the church wants to maintain that ordered biological structure of the family in adoptions. Now, our culture has a very just different view about, you know, love is love. It doesn't matter. There's no such thing as sexual orderedness. You know, the culture is a very different view. And so the church, though, believes the child has a right to be raised by their mother and father, and if that can't happen, by a mother and father, that the best substitute to that. And to purposely deny them a mother and father would be wrong, and that would happen with same-sex adoption. So do you see where I'm coming from here?
Yeah, and I just see my peers basically countering against, we're basically saying a single-parent home is better than that of a homosexual household with two loving parents.
I guess for me, I just see
them countering me, and I can't seem to...
Sure. The lovingness aside, because I'll say about this. Let's say, for example, you have a situation where, let's say in a more impoverished country, two nuns basically adopt a child and they take care of this child in their convent because nobody else will. Let's say it's a very impoverished place. I'm not necessarily even opposed that in that situation, when there's this child's either on the streets or is taken in and raised by a quote-unquote same-sex couple, you know, between one of those two alternatives where you don't have anything else on the table, in that loving situation, that's fine. But what we need to look at here, though, is also the presence of ordered sexuality. When the church places children for adoption and they have a choice between here's a couple that exhibits ordered and healthy sexuality and here's where sexuality is disordered, would we place a child there? Is that what's best for the child? I think you and your friends, the disagreement ultimately is not going to be about adoption per se, but about the morality of same-sex behavior. That for them, well, I don't think same-sex behavior is a big deal, so let them adopt. It's not disordered in any way. That's the root of the disagreement. So like an analogy I might offer is, well, let's say you have a child, you have a man and woman who want to adopt the child, and there's a polygamous couple, a man and three women or four women. You know, should a church be able to say, well, no, we want to teach a child that marriage is a union of only two people. We believe that's the most healthy way for them to be raised. That would be another example of saying, well, look, there's disordered sexuality here. And the church has an obligation to help a child be raised in a healthy environment. So it's ultimately, you see how it's ultimately going to come back to with your friends. What should children be given in a place in a family that most closely resembles their natural biological family? And where does the role of the sexual morality and health and the naturalness of the couple, what role does that play? Whether it's same-sex couple, it's homosexual or polygamous, you know, that's going to be the root of the disagreement. Do you see where it really is in this?
I do. So in the church's position of homosexuality, if a person is, I guess, finds themselves having homosexual tendencies but does not actually engage in the sexual act or physical, I guess, impulses,
mm-hmm.
Is that person still abiding or still within the parameters of what the church teaches as far as morality? Like, I guess I get conflicted because when I hear us going against homosexuality, it's usually connected to the actual, because they are engaging in sexual activities outside of the sacrament of marriage and obviously physically going against physical nature. But if they don't physically act or find it upon themselves to have that self-discipline to not engage in such activities, does that still fall within the moral standards of our church?
Yes. If you look at the Catechism in paragraph 2359, what the church teaches is that homosexual persons are called to chastity by the virtues of self-mastery that teach them inner freedom, at times by the support of disinterested friendship, in the sense of platonic friendship. By prayer and sacramental grace, they can and should gradually and resolutely approach Christian perfection. So the idea here is that all of us have inclinations. We have concupiscence, is the fancy word for it, that we have an attraction to the flesh in an unhealthy way, sexual desires that spring from us from our fallen natures that just come from within. We can't necessarily control them, but we can control whether we indulge in them or not, including even our own thoughts. So what the church uses for everyone, whether they have deep-seated attractions to people of the same sex or the opposite sex, because you can have cases of married men and women who find themselves attracted to people they're not married to, having the attractions themselves is not sinful, but to indulge in thoughts about them or living out those inclinations through actions, that is where the sin would come into play. That is where the disorder would be manifested in actuality, and so in behavior, I should say. And so that you're right. So the inner dispositions, our attractions, are not sinful in and of themselves, and we are called to self-mastery and prayer to live out our lives in God's grace, regardless of what attractions we may have. So is that a helpful answer?
Yes, that is. Thank you.
Okay, great.
Thank you, Agnes. Thank you, Trent. We'll take a quick break, and we'll be right back with more Catholic Answers Live right after this.
Don't you just love listening to Trent Horn? Did you know you can book Trent or any of our other great speakers to speak at your parish or special event? Contact one of our seminar coordinators through the Speakers Bureau section on Catholic.com today to find out more information.
Hi, this is Trent Horn, and I'm here to tell you about my new book, Hard Sayings, A Catholic Approach to Answering Bible Difficulties. Have you ever read something in the Bible that confused you? Or has a skeptic ever asked you to explain a scandalous passage and you didn't know what to say? Doesn't Genesis contradict science? Why does the Bible promote slavery? How could God order his people to kill women and children? It's happened to just about everyone. But now you have a place to turn for the answers. In Hard Sayings, I look at dozens of the most confounding passages in Scripture and offer clear, reasonable, and Catholic keys to unlocking their true meaning. After reading this book, you'll be equipped to answer the toughest questions skeptics ask about the Bible. So don't be left without an answer again. Order your copy of Hard Sayings today by calling 1-888-291-8000, by visiting the shop at Catholic.com, or by asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
The Catholic Answers Minute. I'm Father Vincent Serpa. In Luke 6:36, Jesus said to his disciples, "Be merciful, just as your heavenly Father is merciful. Stop judging, and you will not be judged. Stop condemning, and you will not be condemned. Forgive, and you will be forgiven." He wanted them to meet persecution with a superhuman charity that demands the absolute surrender of the self to God's purposes. He cautioned them not to judge themselves better than others, and that correction must always begin with themselves. But he was not telling them to stop using their intellects in the cause of distinguishing right from wrong. He told them to imitate their Heavenly Father's mercy, after all. As we all know, the Father's mercy often expresses itself by correcting and holding people accountable. He shows us that love must always be our motivation. I'm Father Vincent Serpa for Catholic Answers, Catholic.com.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
One more segment with Trent Horn on why do you reject Catholic morality? Do you reject Catholic morality? Any aspect of Catholic morality, from chastity to capital punishment to just war theory to immigration? We're happy to take your calls, 888-318-7884. We go to Mike in Columbus, Ohio. Mike, you are on with Trent Horn.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Thank you.
So I have my friends have kind of been pushing natural family planning on me, and I've looked into it quite a bit, and I guess I'm just a little bit confused because the whole like planning aspect doesn't sit well with me, and I don't know how to approach it. I guess I mean I kind of thought when I got married that getting married meant having children, so I don't know why I would want to plan my family.
Well, that's an interesting question, Mike. Yes, when we marry as Catholics, we promise to be open to life and that the fulfillment of marriage is found in having children. But God also gave us rational minds. He helped us understand what is prudent, what's a good decision that we should make. And one of the things he gave us is the ability to understand when a couple is fertile or not fertile, and how to choose when to engage in sexual relations, to plan, for example, the number of children to have or when someone would have a child. Would you agree that a couple may want to have children but might decide they could only care for a certain number or at a certain time?
Well, yeah, but would you agree that God will provide? I mean, like, we live in the richest country in the world.
Uh-huh. Well, just because we live in a prosperous country doesn't mean people have every couple is prosperous. There's many people in the United States that are trying very hard to get by on very meager means. But what if God were to say, you know, imagine I decided to have 15 children on a very, very low salary, and I purposely chose to have this many, and I go to heaven and I say, God, you know, God will provide. God says, yeah, I provided you with the means to have this number of children. It just seems to me that, Mike, wouldn't it be, for example, we have to practice prudence. Like, for example, if a couple spends, 80% of their income on something like rent, for example, and they don't leave enough over for food, and they simply say, well, God will provide, isn't that just a shorthand excuse for them to act irresponsibly in that avenue?
Well, yeah, but I mean, I don't know anyone with 15 children. We're talking,
I know people with 12
that are,
well, who can
sure,
provide.
Sure.
So, but I'm just saying, Mike, couldn't someone, we should be responsible when it comes to caring for our children. Would you agree?
I should.
Okay.
But I don't think we should use that as an excuse to reject God's will for our family.
Well, how does a person know? What do you mean by God's will for someone's family? What do you mean by that?
Well, I mean, be fruitful and multiply. Doesn't the church teach that that's one of the purposes of marriage, is to have children?
Sure, but wouldn't someone fulfill that purpose even if they have one child?
Well, yeah, they would, but I mean, that doesn't...
Mike, let's look at it this way. Would they fulfill the purpose if they received the children from God they felt like they could care for?
wouldn't they be fulfilling God's purpose if they say, well, we raised the number of children we reasonably felt that we could? Like, for example, would you agree that if a family feels like they're stretched thin with four children, they've got no money left over at the end of each month, it's pretty tight, it would be irresponsible for them to go out and adopt a fifth child?
It would, but that's relative. I mean, stretched pretty thin is relative. I mean,
but would you say, though, there are there circumstances where a family feels like,
yeah.
Okay. So it seems to me that where we would disagree is, you know, yeah, I want to follow you through with this where we're going. I'm glad that you understand, many people don't, that part of marriage is having children. That's awesome that you get that, because a lot of people just can't see that obvious reality of marriage. But it seems to me, I'm trying to see where your disagreement lies, that we have to keep having children in order to fulfill God's will. I would say a couple should responsibly receive the children they can care for. Does that make sense to you?
It does. We're kind of on the same page. It seems in my particular parish, there's kind of like an overemphasis on natural family planning. So I don't want, you know, I couldn't handle 15 children, but four or six doesn't seem unreasonable. And it seems like 80% of the time I hear about natural family planning and 20% of the time I hear about, you know, the blessings of large
sure.
families.
And I think, so, Mike, the reason you might hear that a lot more, like natural family planning, is so that people, to give them an alternative to the culture's easy sell of contraception. That it's just such,
yeah.
do you see where I'm saying that?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, the culture is just throwing at them this key to solving your problems. If you feel stressed out, worried about family, number of children, the key to your problems, my friend, is to go down to the pharmacy, go to your doctor, get a prescription, pick up this, and your problems go away. I mean, and that is a seductive, false promise in our culture. So the church is going to, and I agree, and I actually agree with you, Mike, in the sense that when I talk to people about natural family planning, a lot of people say, oh, it's a great way to plan your family, great way to you know, make sure you don't have too many children that you can't care for. And I'll remind them, well, natural family planning, yes, it helps you plan so that maybe if you don't feel as if you can have a child. But one of the other great things is if you're struggling with infertility, natural family planning is a very efficient way to track fertility so you can have a child. I've known many people who were diagnosed with infertility but went to a natural family planning physician and were actually helped to have a child through this method. So I agree with you. There can be an imbalance in how it's presented, but I think part of that imbalance arises because the church is trying to fight a culture that heavily, heavily promotes contraception. You see what I mean?
Yeah, I see.
Okay, great. Well, yeah, definitely give that some more thought. And I'd recommend our friend Jason Everett has a great website, chastityproject.com, has resources on contraception. I think One More Soul is another organization. Si, is that correct? They have some good resources on that.
They do indeed. Yep.
All righty. Very good. Well, thank you so much, Mike, for calling in. Hopefully we'll catch you on another time.
Thank you, Mike. Robert, in Redding, California, you are on with Trent Horn. What do you reject in Catholic morality?
Not so much reject, just a brilliant show, guys, and Trent. Just a question kind of along the sexual morality and ethics is, if a couple is using contraception, whether inside the church, which we know some parishes upwards of 80% or more, or outside the Catholic Church, before they get married, during the marriage prep, and after, are they actually consummating their marriage? Because we're seeing a lot of controversy over communion to divorced and whether that's pastorally being taken into account. But I guess the real question is it consummated when their couple is using contraception?
Yes. There may be a question about the validity of a marriage that perpetually uses contraception and the couple, or at least one of the partners, is not open to life in any way, shape, or form, and is opposed to that from before the marriage on through it. So there may be a question about validity.
But if the couple engages in the marital act, if that act takes place, even if there are things to try to contracept it or to prevent the procreative end of it, if the act is achieved, even once, then the marriage has been consummated. The two became one flesh. There may not have been an important end, may have been blocked in that, but the act itself still took place, even if contraception were used. So if the act took place, it would be consummated, but some perpetual uses of contraception could question the validity of marriage in certain cases. But I'm not saying someone who just used contraception, you know, who just habitually used it, would necessarily be in an invalid marriage. I'm not saying that. What I am saying, though, is that if a couple used contraception on their wedding night, if they did that, it would still be a valid and consummated marriage because they engaged in the marital act.
Thank you, Robert. Let's get as many as we can in before the top of the hour here. Trent, we go to Kalima in Portland, Oregon, listening on Modern Day Radio. Kalima, you're on with Trent Horn.
Hello, guys. I appreciate your show, and I listen to it as often as I can.
Well done. Good taste.
I have a question. I guess it's all kind of now kind of been tied as far as contraception goes, because I understand our Catholic theology. I'm actually attending RCIA, the local parish here, so soon to be, you know, chosen amongst the chosen. But I do have a question as far as abortion and people who aren't Catholic that don't necessarily believe as much as we do in life and the sanctity of marriage and that sex is for procreation and procreation is served for those who are married. Mm-hmm. How do we convey, I don't know, kind of effectively, I guess, how do we get people to our side, so to speak? Because I would obviously, abortion shouldn't exist. It shouldn't be a thing that should be legal. And I think in my state of Oregon, it's legal through all 8 months, which is 9 months, which is atrocious. So is there no moral ground then for proposing contraception in place of abortion for people who are not Catholic? Like, is that a moral stance we can take?
No, it's not, because what we would be doing here is we're answering one evil with another. For example, that would be like saying, well, let's try to answer child molestation by giving pedophiles child pornography instead. And it's just an analogy. I'm not saying people who support abortion or contraception are pedophiles. It's an analogy that to answer one evil with another evil, that is not how the church should approach these issues. And I'm also skeptical of this method working, because I know people say, well, if you give people contraception, there'll be less unintended pregnancies and less abortions. My thoughts on that would be as follows. First, the goal of the pro-life movement, the goal of the Catholic Church on this issue is to restore the right to life of the unborn. And so the problem here is that giving contraception doesn't change people's attitudes to see the unborn are worth valuing, that they deserve a right to life. It doesn't contribute to that in any way. Second, if anything, it may devalue that. It may cause people to think that the unborn don't matter as much. I was at a university once and the student said, why aren't you passing out condoms? And I said, well, there's condoms at your campus health center. He said, yeah, but that's, 200 yards away from here. I don't want to walk that far. I mean, so you see that, but in promoting contraception, we're promoting an anti-life, anti-responsibility mentality towards children, a contraceptive mentality that leads to an abortive mentality. And I talk about that a little bit in my book, Persuasive Pro-Life, which you can always check out to see more. But thanks for calling, and we'll pray for you in your RCIA process. Keep moving towards the truth.
Thank you so much, Kalima. Thank you to everyone who called today. Thank you, Trent Horn.
And thank you, Cy Kellett.
It's been a pleasure being with you for 2 hours today on Catholic Answers Live. Well, I guess we'll be back in, I don't know, how many hours is it? 22 hours. See you again in 22 hours on Catholic Answers Live.